Can you make them look very foolish or very clumsy before the court by bringing your objections timely or bringing your objections correctly with knowledge of the law? I've stood there and I've made my pleadings, and I don't use adjectives, adverbs, and pronouns, and it's real quiet in the courtroom. The district attorney can't jump up and keep saying objection, 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 because I'm using facts that are controlled by the condition of the mind. The will of intent is the only thing that you address your testimony to. When it's the opposition's turn to talk and he wants to get into adjectives, adverbs, and pronouns, you can shut him down. And the judge will say, well, what does that mean? You're going to say, well, I don't know. The minute you say, I don't know, the case is dismissed under 12B1. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12B1. That means you don't have subject matter jurisdiction over what it is you're talking about before the court. It creates a fraud. Once a fraud, always a fraud, the case is dismissed. Now, another thing that they like to do is they like to use conclusionary law cite. A conclusionary law cite has nothing to do with the facts before the case. A conclusionary law cite has nothing to do with the condition of your mind. It has to do with the condition of somebody else's mind. And it also is a disqualification under the terminology continuance of evidence. The continuance of evidence before the court must be highly defined. It must be timely. It must be exact. When you say being exact is your highly defined. And these attorneys that continually come back and use conclusionary law sites, or they'll come back and say, this terminology that Mr. Miller is using in court doesn't follow any known laws, just because it's all procedure. They're looking for conclusionary law sites because that's all they were ever taught how to speak. Everything that these attorneys were taught how to do violates the Fifth Amendment of due process of law. That's why they have to move these cases into a gold ring flag, into a foreign country, to get away from the rules and regulations of the Constitution, because they can't make the case if they did. They have no standing to speak in court because of the way they were trained. Where an attorney used to be somebody that I used to highly respect, today I look at this person as somebody that's a criminal, that's a master at extortion, that is only there for one purpose, and that's to hurt me. It's pretty unique because we've got 40 kids next door here getting ready to take a bar exam. They're the ones that should be in here. What's that? Yeah, what's that? Really? They got cold French fries in there? I guess they got to keep, stay with their few facts, though. Should invite them over. They don't know. And if they do know, they're sworn to secrecy. Which is always, because anytime you want to ask an attorney anything, even your own attorney, Joe, will never give a straight answer. They just say, well, if you need the money, maybe $2,500 or $5,000, I'll take care of it. Depending on how much money you pay them, it's how big the bribe is going to be. How much? Yeah, because they don't want to, they don't want to track the money off the same hands. If you have a check, you create a corporate entity. We'll get into that in a few minutes. All right, that's section A. Okay, yeah, the first page of section A, that goes through a brief outline as to the procedures you have to follow to file a lawsuit. You create your lawsuit, and you have to put your name in upper and lower case. Both the plaintiff and defendant's names must be in upper and lower case. If you put them in all uppercase, it creates a dead entity. It's called a nom de guerre. NOMDEGUERRE. It also creates a Title 18 U.S.C. 1342, which is a fictitious use of a name for mail fraud. Carries a 5-year prison sentence and a $10,000 fine. Now, the attorneys that have sent me paperwork on this, I send them back a corrector lawsuit, and I send them back their paperwork as an exhibit, charging them with mail fraud. From that day forward, I get all of my correspondence done in upper and lower case. Right? Now that they know that they can be tried criminally for what they did. And I still have the original documentation. most attorneys immediately withdraw from the case and drop the whole subject. They give it back to their client and says, no, I'm not going to do this for you. Because if this guy wants publicity, he can take me to federal court now on mail fraud extortion. Now, the attorneys, when they do file a motion to dismiss against your complaint, they will put your names in uppercase nom de guerre, creating a Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 10A violation. It also initiates the mail fraud violation under Title 18, 1342. These two factors now disqualify their paperwork. And when they file a motion to dismiss, the word dismiss is a traverse because they're saying that this document has substance, therefore it must go away. And only if you want it to go away, you discharge it. But it never happened. But it dismisses, it exists and we have to argue about it. So we've got to make it go away. Because they file this motion to dismiss, they traverse and say, what we have filed upon the court has validity. It is a valid claim. And when we want this thing dismissed for filing a frivolous action, we want an attorney fee because they're asking for money now it qualifies under mail fraud extortion because they put their name, your name, in uppercase nom de guerre. It's a fatal mistake that they make because they ask for money. Mail fraud extortion carries a 10-year prison sentence. So it's in that. That also comes under Criminal Code Title 18, 871 and 872. If the reduction of the finances that they are looking for reduces you beyond a point of recovery, then it's restitution. It comes under the RICO Act. Little thing that they do when they file this motion to dismiss, excuse me, a motion to dismiss is not an answer to a complaint. So when that 20 days runs out and they haven't answered the charges that you have brought against them, you now you qualify for a default judgment under Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 55. You file that as one separate document. It's only one page long. And you bring out the fact that they didn't answer you within the 20 days provided under Federal Rules of Civil Procedure for time. The next thing you do is you file a Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 56 for summary judgment, which means you want to have the prayer that was placed in the original complaint activated. If you want to get paid the money that you had asked for because these people have not answered your complaint properly. And the third thing is you ask for a declaratory judgment for the money damages under Rule 57. Now, upon filing these here, the judge has 30 days to give you back an answer or to order both parties into arbitration to go ahead and settle this because one party wants it dismissed, the other party has moved for summary judgment to get paid. Because of this arbitration, the very first thing that they will do is they want you to say your name. To make contracts with their girlfriend's wife. But because we have a disclaimer on our contracts now that tells them that they cannot take us into a foreign government, that they can't, that they don't have a standing, they use phone conferencing to get around this, so they can still maintain their flag in the jurisdiction of wherever they are, they will have their admiralty flag or their military flag or their de facto, in other words, their gold frame, their desecrated flag, creating this non-entity. Now this is a room, it's got four corners. Four cornering means that you remove something from its surroundings. Whatever flag you place in a room like this here takes jurisdiction over this room. That's why they've got gold frame flags in it. So I can go walk in there with my Title 4 U.S. 1 flag and capture that room and make it to common law. Pretty fun. So, we've got another thing. It's called your brackets. Now, brackets are used as a trick by the attorneys and by judges. Bracket, the square bracket, like this here. A square bracket removes the statement from the paper. You got to find a traffic citation, put a bracket around your name. There's no signature on that paper. Now, what happened here, some of you know Sandra Lynn, a friend of mine, been at some of my seminars, and for those who haven't heard this, I'm going to show you. Now, a 12B6, which says, failing to state a claim upon which relief can be granted is probably the number one defense that attorneys use to get cases disqualified. And what happened is, the State Farm Insurance Company answered a complaint filed by her, and they did it correctly. They upper and lower case her name, addressed her properly, answered all the charges with expanded definitions, so that it was a 100% proper complaint, proper answer, except for one little detail. With a real fine pen, they put a bracket around the word F, put around the, a bracket around the F, and failing to state a claim upon which relief can be granted upon the original subject matter. Now, what this does is it removes the F from the paper. Now the word becomes ailing, A-I-L-I-N-G. Ailing means corruption on the original subject matter. It comes where the grandfather clause came from in our laws. So what the court was, what these attorneys, very cleverly, there was 24 attorneys involved with this case. This is what they came up with. The brainstorm to see if they could defeat my procedure. They very carefully put a bracket around this F, and now they made the statement that the defendant was corrupt in her original pleadings on the original subject matter from the beginning. Is what that says, just because they put a bracket around an F. Because she was corrupt on original pleading, she committed a fraud against the court. Therefore, case dismissed because of the fraud, sanctioned for court costs and attorney fees, about $10,000. So what we did is we wrote them an explanation about their little bracket, filed a notice of refusal for fraud on the site, on their paperwork, and sent it back to them. On Monday, we go to the final, I was going down to LA on Monday, for the final settlement on this case. Last week, they was just the case Saturday. This week, Tuesday, that case was scheduled to go to court on a motion to dismiss. On Monday, we filed the treason papers against the attorney and the judge. The case was then removed from the docket. They would not allow it into state court, and the judge ordered, so did the insurance company and everybody concerned, it ordered this thing into litigation, still set for Monday to settle it. They don't want to bring the treason into the courtroom. Because that case has already gone to three trials before I was brought into it. Because they took Sandra Lynn into a foreign entity under Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 8 of the Constitution, they already committed the treason. They either settle with us or everybody that touched this case from the day it started goes down for 76 years in prison. Pretty strong bargaining chip. She gets her settlement. She signs the FRCP 41, and the case is now gone. And they will seal this case. Believe me, they will seal this thing. Yeah, you'll never see it because they're going to seal this one. She'll get her money, but they'll seal it. So there's never no public, not public record.
I'm not going to say what they did with the bracket. They said plaintiff cannot win or something to that effect, and then they had the bracket on the plaintiff.
Linkiff. Look up the word linkiff.
So,
and they totally...
Is that what the word is?
Yeah, what they're doing is they remove, or they'll take and they'll say that plaintiff can't prosecute this case. And they'll put a bracket around the NT, which says plaintiff can prosecute this case. Totally reverse the entire intent of the whole document from one bracket. Be very, very, anytime you see a bracket on a document, you know you've got a fraud in front of you. You refuse it, don't even get excited, perverse into it. So if you want to do a lot of homework, look up all the words, look them up anyway, it's a good learning process for you to see what the tricks and traps are that they wish to perpetrate on you. Yes? Correct. Why would you want to do that? I take, when somebody addresses me as a defendant, I refuse that for fraud. I change it to a respondent. A defendant is someone that has been charged in a case by a jury and is now defending themselves. Now the judge came back and said, no, defendant has been the proper terminology for 100 years, and it is our policy and custom, which was a killer when he said that one, it's our policy and custom to call everybody a defendant. I'm going, well, good, that's a 1983 personal injury under notes, chapter 21, notes 319 and 337. I said, that violates my due process of the Fifth Amendment and 14th Amendment. I said, and you swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States. You just committed perjury of oath, Your Honor. I said, while engaged in perjury and deprivation of rights under Title 18, 242, you just lost jurisdiction in this case. And says, can we all go home now?
What'd you do?
Dismiss the case. Spoke out of things. But it's knowing the phraseology and a right not used is the right sacrifice. So you have to know when to speak and how to say it. Now what I've done here is, with my 22,000 hours of research, is I've removed all the garbage and I've given you a bottom line so that you can study the right terminology. The little bit of procedure that's in here encompasses every subject matter in law. And it can be used anytime, anywhere, on any subject. They must follow the procedure or they will not have a standing in court. And you can defeat any case. The first time you break procedure, you defeat that case and you win. Doesn't matter if it's traffic citation. Doesn't matter if it's income tax evasion or tax issues. With this procedure, you can get the proper effect of what is supposed to happen when you have your day in court. And having your day in court is protected under the First Amendment right to grievance, freedom of speech, right to press. Fifth Amendment is due process. Sixth Amendment, right to a speedy trial. Seventh Amendment, right to a common law trial. Eighth Amendment says they can't treat you with cruel and unusual punishment. And the Ninth Amendment is very important because it says that elected officials are picked by the people. Was the first three words of the Constitution, we the people. So, the Ninth Amendment gives them the authority, because they are elected by the people, to uphold the Constitution of the United States. And when they do that, as elected officials, they have to create the laws for their state that are not represented. We're not putting the original Constitution. That's where we come to the Tenth Amendment. But the Tenth Amendment is protected by the 14th Amendment, Article 1. No state will create a law that abridges the constitutional rights. What's a gold fringe flag doing in the state court? What's a gold fringe doing around a state flag? They're trying to abridge the Constitution. They're trying to make their own oath and affirmation go away. So they commit perjury of oath. They violate the Tenth Amendment. They violate the Ninth Amendment. And if they take away your constitutional rights, that's cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment. Then they go ahead and they violate, you don't get your right to a fair trial under the Seventh, because they can't have a common law trial in a foreign government. Because common law represented by the Constitution of the United States. You don't get a speedy trial because it makes you seem to drag on for years. Anytime you go past your 45 days for settlement, you know the insurance company that's handling the case, or the judge is handling the case, has violated the Sixth Amendment, which then violates the due process of the law of the Fifth Amendment. And your first, and if you get stuck in jail any place along the way here, you've got a Fourth Amendment violation, because they never give you a proper Fourth Amendment warrant to go to jail. The judge, just like when he sent me to jail for 5 days, the judge was supposed to sign an affidavit with a Fourth Amendment warrant with his signature on it and hand it to me in the courtroom, or give it to the bailiff to give to me, and then they could take me to jail. But he denied me my freedom of speech, freedom of press, right to grievance, right to produce evidence before the court. And because he violated these things, he created an obstruction of justice under Title 18, 15, 12, 10-year prison sentence for that one. Now that brings us back to the 11th Amendment. The 11th Amendment now states that no foreign state shall have jurisdiction over sovereign citizens. It says foreign state, doesn't say foreign power. Because the 10th Amendment gave the states their power. That's why we get into the 11th Amendment now, because it deals strictly with the states. So what did they do? They put a gold fringe around the state's flag, creating a foreign state in the court. But federal flags have jurisdiction over state flags, so they put gold fringe around the federal flag, Title 4 U.S.C. 1. In any factor, you either have a federal government, I mean a foreign power, or a foreign state, neither of which has jurisdiction over the sovereign citizen state person, a state party, or sovereign citizen constitutional party. They believe that they're covering both of their both grounds in any capacity, which they're not doing. See, because if you were to put gold fringe around a Title IV USC 1 flag and then have a state flag without gold fringe on it, on a pole, the state flag has jurisdiction over a foreign flag, and you'd be bound by state rules and regulations. But then they don't need that because the state rules and regulations are absolutely parallel to the United States Constitution, which means these are guaranteed due process. The same things that are guaranteed in the federal rules and regulations are also guaranteed in the states because of Article 4, Title 14, the 14th Amendment, Article 1. No state shall have jurisdiction. No state shall create a law to abridge the Constitution. So you're going to use the 9th Amendment and go through the 11th Amendment because a state official has, he's elected, he has to uphold the Constitution. So that automatically says you can't create a foreign government in the 11th. Then you jump to the 14th Amendment, which gives you due process and equal protection of the law of the Constitution initially. And because no state can create any laws to abridge the Constitution, you go back to the 5th Amendment, which gives you your due process of law. Knowing how to use the Constitution as a procedure, when these people drafted this thing in 1776, it was a work of genius because it totally blows away the foreign government that is captured every flag in the world. All 250 nations in the world have mainstream flags. Now gold fringe around their flags. Or they have gold spears on their flagpoles, making them military jurisdiction. We're going to the courtroom have gold eagles on their flags. A gold eagle can only be used by the President of the United States unless he personally authorizes the judge by handwritten signature, by declaration from the President, that that judge can personally use an eagle on his flagpole. I haven't seen a federal judge yet in any court with that authorization. Now, in Executive Order, Executive Order 10834, dated April 29th, 1957. 10834. I've got it right here. Wait, this is dated August 25th, 1959. This is when 57 is when Alaska, Hawaii came in, and 59 is when Alaska came in. Right? Or the other way around. Alaska came in the 49, right? And then Hawaii came in. But you'll find that in the Federal Register. You can pull that up on the internet and download it on your computer. And it gives you the dimensions of the flag. It explains the desecration of the flag, that you can't put anything on it. So if you put gold fringe on it, says you can't put anything on it, Title 4 USC 3. So nobody can make an excuse, well, it's just declaration. You can't put declarations on the flag. It's guaranteed that they can't be decorated.
Oh,
And if you do that, it causes a desecration of the place. Because nobody knows it. They have taken every Army regulation that has explained that, and the books that are all made up, that you know, go to the library once and get a book on flags. It'll all be Admiralty flags. Every flag in that book will have gold frames on it. I've been to the library. Our big public library in Milwaukee has got over 2.5 million books in it. There isn't a single book in that library that describes anything anywhere about any Title IV USC-1 flag. Every flag in every book is described with gold fringe on it in every country of the world. Right. Now, another thing is, when you go into your churches, you have gold fringe on your flags in your churches. To qualify for a 501c3 exemption, you must put a gold fringe on your flag and the church flag. They want to capture all the flags so that you are psychologically keyed up and you grow up looking at the gold fringe on the flag thinking this is the proper flag. They put it in our schools and have our children pledge allegiance to a gold fringe flag, thinking that they're pledging allegiance to the Constitution of the United States, where in fact they're pledging allegiance to a de facto government that suspends the Constitution. Now, if you watch some of the TV programs, Discovery Channels, Overseas News Broadcast, the Scola Channel, every now and then they'll show close-ups of flags in courtrooms or government officials of these different countries. You'll always see a gold fringe on their flags in these foreign countries. They've captured every flag in every country. But my broadcast on these procedures gets sent out on short waves every single night, 7 days a week. It goes out worldwide. In all 250 nations of the world, people are studying the Dave Miller Law procedures about trying to get the gold fringe off of their flag. And now with the treason technology, this procedure works in all 250 nations because all 250 nations have protections in their constitutions for desecrations of their national flags. But it's been a secret among this inner circle of people trying to take over the government under a new world order. They want to incorporate the entire planet under contract and do away with all the different countries and constitutions, enslave the planet. That is the intent. Well, there's a couple prophecies out there, but one says good, the other one says bad. And there's two ways we can do it. There's nothing wrong with a one world order, provided we are innocent until proven guilty and have a constitutional right. But if you're going to have a one world order where you're guilty until proven innocent with no rights whatsoever, that's enslavement. And our Constitution guarantees us that we're not allowed to enter into contract for slavery. The world government also has the same constitution that you cannot enslave another nation. Just like when Iraq wanted to move into Kuwait, everybody picked up arms and went to stop it. Or when South Africa wanted to practice apathy. It was shunned from the whole planet until they came into the fold of freedom. Freedom has always been here. It's always been alive and well. There's nothing wrong with our constitution. It functions perfectly. Because every single person in government, it doesn't matter what you are in government, legislature, congressman, a senator, a lawyer, attorney, a judge, police officer, a clerk of courts, they all have to swear to support the Constitution of the United States, which makes them federal employees. Which means that the first contract of authority is with the Constitution of the United States. The first contract of authority is to guarantee that the people dealing with shall be treated equally and that they will have their freedom. And then they go ahead and they put up a gold fringe flag at the doorway of the courthouse, the doorway of the legislature, and they fly these every place so they can suspend the Constitution of the United States. And the treason papers that are in the document can be filed on anybody employed underneath that flag because they have committed perjury of oath and have surrendered their oath and affirmation to a foreign power. Can you have the authority under Title 42, U.S.C. 1986 for knowledge of the law to enforce the negligence under Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 8 of the Constitution? And under Title 18, 1621, perjury of oath, and Title 18, 242 for deprivation of rights. Can remove these flags, or you can file, and you can do this in the peanut gallery. You don't have to have a case before the court, go after every senator, judge, congressman, anywhere.
What about the president?
What about him?
I don't see it. He can do anything he wants.
Well, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to, now, as you know, 1933, the United States went bankrupt. So they went ahead and they created the War Powers Act. I brought down with me a book here called The War and Emergency Powers. This is written by Gene Schroeder. Very good. Good lessons learned on flags. Goes all the way back to when Julius Caesar, and how the flag. I did a lot of research. Good. It's a very good book. I highly recommend anybody read it. It gives you all your your declarations by government creating all these different entities on the flag. But Mr. Schroeder made one little mistake in the entire book. Even back in Julius Caesar's time, 3,000 years ago, they put gold fringe on the flag. He talks about the gold fringe on the flag throughout the entire book. But what he has failed to bring out is the sanctuary of the bar is neutral territory. A flag is sovereign. When you have a sovereign person with a flag represented by the Constitution that is set up, the sovereign person with the constitutional flag or the national flag, not the national flag, the flag represented by their constitution, declares his sovereignty, will capture and has jurisdiction over all flags, all foreign flags. Now you find that in Army Regulations 840-1, Chapter 2-1. Now what that means is that when you go into the sanctuary of the bar with your Title 4 USC 1 flag, you capture the court back into common law. And even during World War II, when the Constitution of the United States is suspended during times of war under the War Powers Act, the sanctuary of the bar is neutral. It is not affected by this law. During this time period, you could have walked into any bar in the United States with a Title IV USC 1 flag and have full constitutional protected rights within the sanctuary. You could have taken a Japanese flag into the sanctuary on sovereign soil. And if that was the only flag inside the bar, you would have to be under the Japanese Constitution. And you would be bound by there. So it would actually create an embassy within the sanctuary, and you would be under their Constitution. You could do the same thing with a Canadian flag, or a German flag, or a Russian flag, or a Chinese flag. You could take the American flag to any of the 250 nations of the world, walk into that court. If there was no flag, with your flag, capture that court and have a United States territory in the sanctuary of that bar as a sovereign citizen, have constitutional rights in the sanctuary of that bar. But all 250 nations of the world are protected by their own sovereign courts, their own sovereign soil. If their sovereign flag enters the sanctuary of the bar, the sovereign flag always has jurisdiction in whatever country you're in. So if it became necessary for an individual to, let's say somebody came here from Japan, broke the law here, the Japanese embassy could go into one of our courts, hold trial with one of their ambassadors under a Japanese flag, using their constitution, using their attorney, and have a Japanese court held on sovereign territory. But if that person, if that party wanted to change the venue to a United States venue, all he would have to do is bring in a Title IV USC 1 flag. And then there would be under a United States jurisdiction immediately. It would capture the Japanese flag and neutralize it. It's a very unique power that under this flag is what controls the jurisdictions of all of our courts. So the very number one thing that you always have to be aware of when you go into court is to look at the flag and make sure the jurisdiction is proper before you even get into subject matter. It happens before you do anything else. If you don't do it, a right not used is a right sacrifice. And if you walk into a foreign entity, you're always going to be found guilty or at the will of their pleading. Now, another unique thing is when you're in this foreign entity, it doesn't matter. There is no constitution. So if you want to lie on the stand, that's permitted. Because the judge flat out at one trial was the police officer got up there and committed perjury. I said, well, I have videotaped, Your Honor. I said, I've certified this man committed perjury. He says, the police officer is allowed to commit perjury in my court. He said, you're not allowed to speak in my court. He said, you have no constitutional rights in my court. And I was found guilty. But that was before I knew better. That was back in 84, 85, if it was, that took place. So this technology has evolved. All they have to do is hurt somebody once. I'm the one guy to hurt. Okay. The incident you're referring to, that ambassador was recalled to his nation and stood trial in his nation for killing a person, killing a sovereign citizen here in the United States. Right. And that carries 20 years in prison, if not death penalty. Yeah, he was sent back, and he stood trial there for the time, because he was an embarrassment. Part of the oath that they take when they come over to foreign countries incorporates those penalties. If you break the laws within the country, you'll stand trial for it in our country under our rules and regulations. In the United States, it's probably got the most lax of all the rules in the world. Because if you've got to go back to your own country and stand trial for these crimes and that, you stand a better chance of surrendering to authorities here than standing trial. Well, if they're involved in a covert or overt activity, they do protect them, yes. Because it's in the best interest of somebody else's pocketbook. I've learned one thing, you follow the money, you're going to find out where the crimes are actually taking place. It's the will of intent. You must go back to thinking. You must go back to who engineered the program. If you go ahead and you say, you engineer a criminal activity, and then you say to another person, you will execute this activity or die. You take the responsibility because the intent is that person wishes to live and he will carry out that violation. He will be tried for one part of the violation. But the person who engineered the plan will stand trial for the will of intent. He will be charged with the same crime, only his crime will be also incorporated conspiracy charge because you've got two people acting together. The unique thing about a conspiracy is that a judge, anytime you charge a judge with a conspiracy under Title 42 U.S.C. 1985, subsection 1, 2, or 3, he immediately loses his immunity from what he did. This is the one time where you don't sue him for what he doesn't do, but for what he does, because he cannot take an active role in a conspiracy. But to get to the conspiracy, you first have to establish what he didn't do to qualify the conspiracy. You have to fight the case in a backwards position. Yeah, 10 minutes to 11. You guys want to take a real break? Digest some of that?
It was signed
September 17, 1779.
Bill of Rights? Yeah.
Yeah, no, birthday.
Wow, this one's a Bill of Rights. 91. You're not thinking of that already? What is that?
Yeah, Bill of Rights.
They claim 90, 91.
Well, it's probably